Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Two, not one, but two legends in this one program. Dr. Steven Ettinger, if you're a veterinary professional, you've heard of this guy. For me, he's a friend. I'm honored to call him a friend. The most legendary veterinarian there is. And I wonder what Dr. Ettinger's perspective is on everything that's gone on. It's veterinary medicine is changing as I speak. So what changes will stick? And I'm curious, as I say, as to what his perspective is. Another legend, Professor Emeritus at Cal Poly State University, licensed psychologist, book author of book after book after book, chair of the Scientific Advisory Board of Pet Partners, which I'm honored to serve on as well, Dr. Aubrey Fine. I wonder if all of this, the pandemic, and us spending so much time with our pets has been good for us.
You know, absolutely, Steve. You know, one of the things you can see just with the uptick on more adoptions, number one, many people recognized that, one, animals are good for our well-being. And that seemed to carry over when you're looking at the shelter world, that many people said when the pandemic came in that they were home and wondered, what were better ways that they could live their life more fruitfully under confinement, and perhaps now that they felt they had more time, spend it with their new pets? That being the case, we're seeing many more animals being adopted. People seem to be spending more time celebrating their lives and sharing their lives with their pets, being newly adopted or, for that matter, animals that they've had for years.
All right, let's talk about that a bit. So the shelters called out at the very beginning of the pandemic, and I want to get back to whether all these animals that we're living with, if they're kind of instant therapy animals, but we'll get there in a second because I want to talk about what you brought up. So successfully, shelters, a cry for help, and it was all over the country. People responded. I think they did myself for a couple of reasons. I think they're altruistic reasons. I want to do the right thing for my community, and I want to save the shelter. At that point in time, we didn't know if employees could even come in, let alone volunteers. So people stepped up because I think they wanted to do the right thing. And then as the pandemic went on, as you point out, we had time. We were doing nothing else. We weren't going anywhere. So if you're going to bring a pet into the home, it seemed like a good time to do, a pragmatic thing to do, if you will. But I think there's a third component. I think that, and I want you're an expert in this, but I think that we are hardwired in some way. We want to lower our own stress level. That is human nature. And in some way, without thinking about it, we realize that one way to do that is to bring consistency into our lives, automatic, for certain, love into our lives. And you're not going to get that from another human being necessarily, but you will always get that from a pet. And even if we don't think about it and kind of think it through cognitively, well, that dog's going to be good for me, I think that we've done it, and we've done it, if you understand the kind of thing that I'm trying to get at here, we've done it because somehow we're just hardwired to help ourselves to feel better, and we know that pets can do that. Am I making any sense to you, Dr. Fine?
Steve, absolutely. When you look at the reasons why people have pets to begin with, two of the major categories, one is the attachment that we have for an animal. For some reason, for sure, many people love to be caregivers and caretakers. And during this time of pandemic, we've been able to do that. We've been able to turn to animals and know that we're providing them with a level of support. By giving to them, we actually end up feeling good about the process by giving to them because we're their voice and we provide them with opportunities. The other whole side to this really relates to animals, all of our pets, for those who really connect. And I think the key word is the connection, is that they represent that social support, the social support of, number one, just being at home and being recognized by a being. Because in reality, so many people being sheltered have not been able to see a lot of people, at least physically, with our animals and with that sense of touch that we have and the connection we actually gain that benefit. And, you know, I'm not going to bore your listeners looking at some of the neurotransmitter changes as well as just cortisol, stress levels going down. Because, you know, you used the key word, Steve, and that was stress. This whole change of the world is so different for all of us. And because it's so different for all of us, that causes stress. So in a time of that's not normal, we want to bring as much normalcy into our lives, consistency. And by sharing it with animals, especially animals that we bond to and feel committed to, it relaxes many of those external stressors.
Are you concerned that the opposite could be occurring, that we are so stressed? We know that our dogs and cats in particular, pet birds, I believe as well, and you have experience with pet birds, I know, they pick up on our emotions. Are you concerned that they may not know why? I mean, they don't watch TV, or if they do, they don't understand perhaps what's going on in the world. They don't read the newspaper. However, they know we're stressed. Are you concerned that they're picking up on that?
It's a two-part question. Yes, yes, I am, because number one, normalcy. I used that word normalcy a couple of times already. Since the COVID brought lots of people to their homes for the whole day, it did change routines for animals. For some animals, they have relished that opportunity. And for some other animals, it's a change in routine, which bothered them perhaps at first, perhaps is pervasive and continues to bother them. The concern also could be once the pandemic changes and we're able to begin to resume whatever we call normal lives in the future, they may not be used to it. So that's the first part to the question, that in fact, I think the animals do need that normalcy. The other part to this is that families today are much more stressed. They just thinking of how you put food on your table, just thinking of parents that are able to work but have kids in the home, and the routines are sometimes helter-skeltered. We are stressed, and for sure the animals mirror that behavior, because dogs especially can unconsciously perceive the stressors that are going on within a home. And I think as pet families, we need to recognize that. These are animals that are sentient beings that need our understanding. So in some ways, routine's critical, but we also need to look at the issues that they may be experiencing as a consequence of COVID. If I could give one example, you know, you see some families that say, geez, I need a walk. I'll just call the dog Fido for a second. And what ends up happening is I saw a commercial one time that everybody in the family was walking the dog. And the dog was almost saying, enough already. I don't want to walk as much. In my case, with therapy animals, it's so much different, because they're so used to being around humans all the time, and now all of a sudden they're not getting that experience. And you can see that in some cases there's a bit more boredom, because the variety, the spice in their daily life, even when I try to do lots of enrichment, isn't always there.
So, Dr. Fine, we only have 30 seconds left. Do you have advice for people as we continue to live through this as to what they can do regarding their pets?
In 30 seconds or less, consistency is really important. Give your dog sort of a routine, or cat, or any animal, a routine that they should expect. And I think more importantly, share that love with the animal, because together we can maybe beat that emotional stresses that we're all going through.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for talking. Dr. Aubrey Fine, my only regret, we didn't have time to talk hockey. We will next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Aubrey Fine. I believe this is the first time I've actually spoken on the radio with Dr. Steven Ettinger. I will tell you, he is, this guy right here, likely the most respected veterinarian in America, one of the most respected and honored veterinarians on the planet. He wrote the book on veterinary cardiology, and I still remember the very first time, Dr. Ettinger, that I met you. I can tell you exactly which veterinary conference it was at. We were going into a speaker room, actually, and you introduced yourself to me. You're not going to remember this, I'm sure. And you introduced yourself to me and said, hi, I'm Dr. Steven Ettinger. And of course, I said, I know. And it was like, you know who I am. I can't really put into words, friends, what an honor it is. Even though I've known you, we're friends, I haven't had you on the radio before for no particular reason, but now we have a reason to talk to you because you've been in veterinary medicine for a very long time. We have something going on now that's not happened before. I'm talking about the way veterinary practices work with clients, with all the pet parents out there. It's different today, this whole drop-off system and the way things are working, the technology, for better or worse. So I thought, who can have perspective more than this guy when it comes to history than Dr. Stephen Ettinger? So first of all, thank you for joining me on WGN Radio. It's an honor to talk to you on the radio, but let's talk about some of that perspective. This drop off the dog or the cat, typically it's a dog or a cat, technician either comes out to get the dog or cat, or maybe you're at the door giving that leash or the carrier to a technician, and from there, things happen, but you don't know immediately what happens. Are there upsides and downsides to this reality that we're in?
Thanks for your kind comments, Steve, but the only downside is if there is a loss of communication. And in every other way, there's upside. We all lead busy lives. We have things to do. I first moved out to California. I practiced in New York for a number of years after graduating. I was in New York City. Then I moved to Berkeley, California, San Francisco Bay Area, set up a specialty practice. And then about 10 years later, moved to Los Angeles, where I have been basically ever since. And when I moved to L.A., we had a drop-off system that I had never really experienced before. But, you know, people are busy. They're on their way to work. They're on their way to taking the kids to school, picking the kids up. So we had a system where clients could just fill out a sheet of paper with their name and the animal's name on it. This obviously is assuming that they'd been a client. And they would drop the dog off, and the veterinarian who they were dropping the dog off for and whom they knew and trusted, they would leave the animal with a little bit of a note. And then we'd examine the dog or the cat or whatever, and then call the client and discuss with the client. And usually, but not always, usually meet with them on pickup. If it was a simple thing like, oh, your dog has tapeworms and we'll just give him some oral medication, he should be fine and the problem should be resolved within 24 or 48 hours. You know, then the client was happy. If it was more detailed, animal needed surgery or whatever, we would meet with the client. It was a very good way of establishing that relationship, that pet-client-veterinarian relationship, because it's always between the three. And if it's not between the three, that's a major loss. But it was a great relationship, and it let you examine the animal, not be rushed because the client had to leave for whatever reason, and still know that you had good communication. Because it doesn't matter how good the veterinarian is, and it doesn't matter what's going on, if there isn't communication that exists, just as there is with a pediatrician, then you're not going to have a successful outcome.
Yeah, because the dog can't communicate or cat can't communicate. Sometimes it's pretty clear, but oftentimes it's not so clear. And that cat can't say, this is what I'm feeling. And in some cases, the cat really does feel normal. The blood work tells the story, but it takes more sometimes than blood work to tell the story. It takes observation from the client. You've been practicing veterinary medicine for how long now?
About 50 years.
Okay. How have you seen the human-animal bond change?
You know, everybody says that, it's much stronger than it used to be. I don't know that that's true. I think when I look back at when I graduated from school in the mid-60s, and I moved to the Animal Medical Center in New York, people love their animals, and they always have. I just think that today we're fortunate in that we're able to do more for our pets, and also people have a little bit more knowledge about what can be done. But, you know, it's interesting. I was giving a lecture virtually last night in Mexico. And I mean, these guys are just as excited and as interested as we always have been. So I think this is a worldwide phenomenon. And as the world is more educated and perhaps a little bit more wealthy, we're able to do things. And we have availability of equipment and tools to use that we didn't have before that make things easier and better for the pets.
You know, this is not what we came to talk about, but I want to ask you this because I have the opportunity. In your 50 years, what is the best thing for you about being a veterinarian?
Well, that's a really easy question to answer. I mean, it's a straightforward shot. Best thing is my time spent with clients. To me, that's the single best thing, and I think it's something that we don't give enough urgency and importance to with young veterinarians today. But it's what the time that we spend, the friendships that I've made, the experiences that I've had, you know, especially in a place like Los Angeles where we really were veterinarians to so many of the stars. But the stars didn't matter. It was the nice people. And if they were nice, it was just great. Always has been. So I would say, you know, I'm sure that many of our listeners wouldn't agree that one golden is just like another golden. But the truth is, after 50 years, they get to look the same, but the clients don't. Hmm. It's just talking with clients. That's so wonderful. You, Steve. Well, just being able to sit and talk with you.
Well,
listen to your stories over the years.
Thank you.
You know, they're wonderful.
Well, I have one more question for you. I know you know about an initiative, and we're running tight on time here, so quickly, an initiative called Fear Free to minimize fear, anxiety, and stress of veterinary visits and to support kindness and animal training and even pet grooming. You've really been, without marketing and using that term, you've been a supporter of this long before the initiative came about. And once it came about, you said, I'm all in. Why does Fear Free resonate with you?
How can you be a veterinarian and not believe in Fear Free? How can you be a veterinarian and not understand that the animal is not a person and the animal doesn't understand what's going on? If you love animals, you love to see them being treated well. So it's a natural process. I can't understand not being fear-free. That doesn't mean that every exposure is, but it's every exposure we should try to be.
All right. Well, it's always fun to talk to you. Know that I love you and wish you the best of health. Thank you so much, Dr. Steven Ettinger.
Thanks, Steve Dow.
As our world is so upside down right now, what brings us together really around the world more than anything else? I would argue dogs. Of course, it would figure I'd say that, but I do say that. And our best friends deserve a lot, including their own day. And every year in Nepal, and we just slid right by it if you didn't notice, our mayor didn't talk about it, Kukur Tihar. That's a holiday that literally means worship of dogs. It's a mini festival, this is all true, that is part of a larger Hindu celebration of Diwali, which I hope I am pronouncing right. It is the Festival of Lights, and according to Nepal tradition, it's one of the festive days dedicated to lots of different things, and this particular day is dedicated to dogs, and who can argue that? So here's what they do. Whether it be a street dog or an owned dog, they shower the dog with affection, with flowers, a garland around the dog's neck, and tilak. Have you ever put tilak on a dog's forehead? That's painted. It kind of looks like a red paste, and it has a red-colored powder, rice, and yogurt would be the recipe if you want to make your own tilak at home or whatever this thing is. But I love it. I love the idea that they are celebrating the bond that we have with dogs. And the question you may have is, well, why are they doing this? So the thought is that dogs are our best friends and also will walk us to the gates of heaven. Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, if I'm ever going to the gates of heaven, I want to go with my dog. So to all of you, happy Kukur Tihar. Next week, choosing the right pet for you for the holidays with Dr. Dana Varble on WGN.